Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
When is tanking okay? When is tanking unacceptable? We had Bill Romanowski on yesterday, who was a four-time Super Bowl champion, a longtime NFL player, and his favorite moment was whenever he beat the Green Bay Packers and Brett Favre, and that was great. That was nice. But here was Bill Romanowski yesterday when we asked him about the idea of tanking and what that means to him as a player.
As a guy that took the field for 16 years and had trust in my coaches to put me in a position to win, and I mean win every single game I went out there to bust their ass for, that one hurts.
That was Bill Romanowski yesterday when he joined us. Full interview at ESPN975.com. Tanking's a very fine line, right? And the reason we're having this conversation, Brian Flores, Stephen Ross, the allegations that Ross offered Brian Flores $100,000 for every loss back in the 2019 season when they were trying to tank for as high a draft pick as possible. Cameron Wolf, Go Cougs, who is a friend of the show. We had him on with the Killer Bees. He actually had a source that was a witness to that, and Cameron Wolf's source said that the witness heard Stephen Ross saying this to Brian Flores. Stephen Ross has since come out with a release saying that what Brian Flores is claiming are not true. They're lies, and that he never offered Brian Flores $100,000 for every loss. But, like, we embraced the suck. We wanted the Houston Texans to be terrible in 2021. We wanted them to get the first overall pick in the NFL draft because it helps the long-term interest of the Houston Texans. We want the same thing in 2022 because we like Bryce Young a whole heck of a lot. We think he could be a franchise quarterback for the Houston Texans. If you want to play the cross-sport comparison with the Houston Astros, why have the Houston Astros had a long period of success is in large part because they tanked for a long time and lost 100 games year in, year out, and they built that through the minor league system. So, like, where is that line drawn between tanking and going too far with the tanking?
Well, I think there's a big difference between putting young, inexperienced talent in your starting lineup on a day-in, day-out basis like the Astros did to lose 100 games a year, and just knowing that you were outclassed on the talent side while these guys were getting their experience. Other teams that already had that and more were taking full advantage. But you still played the game, and if you were winning in a game, you weren't going to suddenly try and throw four pitches down the middle of the plate and let somebody beat them up on you. You know, that kind of took care of itself just in the differences from a talent perspective, as opposed to an owner saying that this is like bounty gate type stuff, right? Yeah. It's like putting a bounty on losses and saying for every game that you lose and find a way to lose, you're almost Pete Rose now, right? Now you're almost to the point of you're absolutely going past the point of just being less talented than everybody else and going to the point of playing with the integrity of the game by trying to alter the outcome.
I would go one step further than Pete Rose. I think it's a boxer taking a dive. Whenever you start putting money on it, you're fixing the game. It's giving a basketball player who – I can't remember the college basketball team that was doing it a long time ago. Remember the players were offered to throw the game, or even if it was to go like the over-under, they were messing with the outcome of the game. So it's a lot different than playing young players or having a really untalented roster like the Houston Texans this past season. But if you get to the point where now here's $100,000 to tank this game, that's whenever there's a huge problem. That's whenever it's a slap in the face of the integrity of the game. The other coach that came up in this conversation yesterday was Hugh Jackson, and he had one of the presidents of the Hugh Jackson Foundation go on Twitter and say that there's proof that the Cleveland Browns and Jimmy Haslam were doing the same thing with Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson went to ESPN yesterday, and this is where the line starts to get blurry to me, because Hugh Jackson doesn't say exactly that he was offered money to lose games. He had a few different things to say. Let's play a couple of the Hugh Jackson sound that he had with ESPN. The first one talking about how the Browns had a tanking plan.
We were paid for you know, you're going to see it as losing. But the way the team was built, there was no chance really to win and win at a high level. You're in a situation to where what you have to do is do the best you can. My record that year was 1-15. There was a 4-year plan that was crafted, and I have documentation of that. I think any coach would kind of cringe at if he saw it, because it talked about things that had nothing to do with winning, aggregate rankings, being the youngest team, having so many draft picks. None of those things are what lead to winning. Teams that win don't have a lot of draft picks.
Now, hearing that, it sounds very Houston Astro-y, right? Like, I don't know what the aggregate rankings mean. He didn't really get into that. But youngest roster in the NFL, and you would get incentives based on that. That sounds like you have a 4-year plan where you're trying to elevate to getting your team and your franchise in a spot where you hope to be a contender at some point, thinking it might come in 4 years. Also, the idea of, like, draft picks. Like, you want to have draft picks if you're a young team. We talk about that with the Houston Texans. Accrue as many draft picks as you possibly can, trying to hit on said draft picks. Also, on the other side of it, like Hugh Jackson saying that we should have been spending money on free agents. We should have been spending money going out to get players. How do we feel in Houston if the Texans went out and signed a bunch of mediocre free agents as they're trying to build in the middle of a rebuild? I don't think that would be something that'd be celebrated.
They did, right? Last year?
No, I mean, they signed like $3 million deals for like Wes Welker. Like, that's not a significant
move. Okay, before
that,
though, some of the guys they brought in were has-beens or never have.
How does that help you win, though?
Because they're banking on the fact that some of them still had something left in the tank, and they were getting a bargain on a guy that might be able to be capable of, as a veteran NFL player, doing some things that can.
Well, they had to fill a roster.
The Texans signed every over-the-hill running back in the league. Every single one of them.
Defensive backs.
But what does that mean? Like, they weren't trying to win, though. They were trying to put together a 53-man roster. If you sign Rex Burkhead and Wes Welker,
I'm never going to carry the torch of they were trying to win last year, because we all know from our embrace to suck to Nick Caserio's opening statements before the regular season that we don't want to be rated and based on wins and losses. It's progress. So, I mean, look, from a fan base, you're never going to be giddy about that, especially when you haven't experienced success at the highest levels like the Patriots of the world and a lot of the other franchises, but you had sustained success at a more than moderate level by winning divisions, winning playoff games, getting to a certain level, and continuing to be thought of as a team that could fight for a division every year.
But we're talking about the Nick Caserio Texans. We're not talking about the past. We're talking about 2021.
So now you go to the Nick Caserio Texans, and the fan base, no matter what you do, short of bringing in like the and having open money bags and no cap to bring in all the best players, you know, are in free agency, fans aren't going to be happy. Fans aren't going to look at that and say I think at least our fan base was realistic going into the season that there was a very slim chance they were going to win at all, let alone win to the level of even what Vegas said. Remember, because we had that discussion earlier in the year. But I think that the thing that screwed everything up a little bit in terms of the perception was they won their opener. There was another time in the year they won 2 in a row. And then all of a sudden people started going, no, you can win. But you don't want to and you shouldn't. And I didn't think they ever had a chance to.
For the Texans to get back into playoff contention, don't you think they have a 4-year plan? Don't you think they have a long-term plan of how they want to build this organization?
We've talked about the plan before.
Right.
I'd like to think so. And I think it's longer than 4. But I think you're right. I think inevitably... And the initial plan is the first 2 years are basically throwaways, right? We're just going to get through the 2 years. We're going to do what we need to do to get all of our draft picks back, get the best picks possible, escape from all of our cap hell. And then we're going to start the next forward progression, which I don't know if it's 2, 3. I think a lot of businesses think on a 5-year plan when they think, you know, more proactively long-term.
Uh-huh.
And I think on a 5-year plan, that's when you start evaluating, is our roster getting better? If so, is our coaching staff the right coaching staff to take it there? What else are we doing?
The Houston Texans now are what the Cleveland Browns were then. So, like, Hugh Jackson saying after year one, in which he won one game, and yeah, the roster was terrible, but it's a job that he took. Mm-hmm. Like, they offered him the job. He could have said no, right? He could have not taken the situation that he was in. He knew how bad that roster was going to be. He tells you he has documented proof that the fact that they were on a 4-year plan, like, I don't understand Hugh Jackson's point and how it's even comparable to what Brian Flores is saying.
Well, I think it's more so to prove the point that Ross wasn't the only owner doing something like this, that organizations were willing to go to whatever means necessary to get the end result that they wanted. and that if paying someone off or putting incentives on a negative, most of the time we see all the contracts are incentives based on positives.
There's always really weird incentives in contracts.
There
like,
can be.
Like Randy Edsall from UConn, he had an incentive where they, if they were the first team to score in a game, he got $5,000.
Which is weird.
You have weird.
But
you
I'm saying
weird
you would never think that there were contracts that were incentivized by negative outcomes.
But they weren't. I mean, the three ones that he mentioned were, I don't know what the metrics were. I mean, maybe that means improvement in yards per game. But all the other ones were the age of the roster, which helps the overall growth of the team,
but
right?
But is that more general manager stuff?
Maybe, but they. To me, this was Jimmy Haslam knowing it was a very difficult job, and he wanted to take care of a guy who accepted the job.
Like a 5-year deal on a coach you fire after year one, I think. But I think that that's more general manager stuff. I think that the thing that you have to look at, and this is why I don't think it's come out yet, and I threw this out to you during the break, but I really believe that what he has to be careful about is we know, according to Flores, he didn't take any of the money. He walked away from that.
And that was outside of contract.
I got a pretty good feeling that Hugh probably took some of that money.
But this was inside of contract. Like, this was written
in the
contract.
I think there was more than just what was in the contract, too.
And we need to know that in discovery. Like, there's a whole lot, maybe, that we don't know.
And I don't think that's why I don't think he wants to get it all the way to discovery. I think they'll investigate the Dolphins. I think he wants to try and be supportive of Flores, but I don't think he really wants that can of worms opened up in terms of what happened there, because I think there may be maybe more to that story, too, in terms of how he capitalized and cashed in. Because in a lot of ways, if that is the way it was set up, even inside the contract, it was more of a professional way of doing a David Culley, right?
See, that's my take, really, is that Hugh Jackson's more David Culley than Brian Flores.
And that's
Flores.
What I said. That's why I said, you know what? It's like giving a guy a 5-year deal and only keeping him for one. You just basically summed it all up instead of those clauses in saying, hey, we're going to give you guaranteed money for more than you're ever going to be here, but that's because you're going to take a lot of bullets and be pulled by a lot of strings.
And I would argue that Jimmy Haslam's 4-year plan is a lot more prudent than Hugh Jackson saying after a 1-15 season, they should be going out and spending a few bucks in free agency. Like, to me, it's a long-term rebuild, much like the Houston Texans are in a long-term rebuild. And to go back to the original question, where does tanking become unacceptable? It's when you're going out of bounds. It's when you're going below board. It's when you're offering $100,000.
Negativity,
and it's not in the contract, right?
Right.
Like, you're breaking league rules. You're spitting in the face of the integrity of the NFL. That's where you cross the line, in my opinion.
And here's the other thing, Jeremy, that I don't think that gets enough attention is the good old boy network believed in the you can't prove it, right? The I can say this to you now. There's no way you're going to be able to prove it in a court of law. You just it goes deeper than that nowadays with the ways and means that people look. I know of NBA coaching staffs that within their coaching staff thought they had a mole. And both sides would take their cell phone and record their coaches' meetings until they could try and have evidence. There's so many other ways now. If there's an actual witness that actually heard that from Ross, he wasn't expecting that. He thought that was just good old boy speak for you and I are you're chatting about something you're never going to be able to prove. Because a lot of times I've been in conversations in the past, too, amongst two parties when they go, hey, I'm going to say this to you now. I'll never admit to it if it ever gets to the point of a court of law. Kind of half kidding. But they knew they could get away with it. You can't get away with that stuff as much now.
713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. Number to call, number to text, 713-780-3776. When we return, what is your favorite Winter Olympic sport? Also, Jim Harbaugh turning down Minnesota. Did Minnesota turn down him? We'll probably never know. But does he ever return to the NFL? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Winter Olympics have started.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, they've started. I think the opening ceremony,
my boy
is
called
Friday.
Curling last night.
He called curling?
Jim Cosimore, who a lot of Rocket fans will remember as a Rockets studio host on radio and then a little bit of TV and Voice of the Comets for a while.
Never heard the name.
He is now Bay Area, and NBC Bay Area does Oakland and San Francisco, but as part of it, he's always been part of NBC's Olympic coverage. And there were curling games, I guess they're games they're called. I don't know.
I think
but there was
matches.
Curling last night competitions, and he was calling them And I actually saw athletes and otherwise tweeting that they were watching that last night at like 10:30 at night.
Yeah, apparently the U.S. Mixed team is like 1-2, I think, so far. What is your favorite Winter Olympic sport? Because it's about to dominate the, at least NBC. 713-780-3776. What's your favorite Olympic sport? What is yours?
Well, when USA is deep in hockey, when they have a really good team, I love watching the medal round of Olympic hockey because it's intense. Mm-hmm. It's like playoff hockey in the NHL. It's fantastic. So I would say that first. And then I would say second would either be the bobsledding.
That's good. That's fun.
Bobsledding's really cool, right?
Yeah, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, it is fun to watch. And maybe some of the downhill because the United States always has Mikhail Shiffrin and some of the competitors they have are up there.
My favorite is I like a decent amount. I'll go Summer Olympics ahead of Winter Olympics every single time. Some of the skiing is good. I like some of the ones where they, I don't know the name of it, sky jumping, I guess, where they go down the hill and then up the ramp and they just fly and they take off.
There is a name for that.
I think it's sky jumping. I think it's sky jumping. That one's really good. My favorite actually is curling. I like the strategy of it.
Do you know how to play? I mean, do you know the rules?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah,
I'm
not
saying it as a negative. I don't.
No, no, no. Yeah, I know the rules. I'm not great with the terminology, but I'll always get like refreshed whenever I'm watching it. And I actually tried it once. I went to like this local curling club here in Houston. It's really hard. Like, it is amazing how hard it is and how good that they are at it. I like the strategy.
Did you go to a good hardware store to get you an old cedar broom so that you could understand the sweeping?
No. They had the brooms there for us. The sweeping's kind of cool. You sweep it out of the way because you can go a little bit further. I love the strategy of it. I think it's really fun to watch. It's a great thing to watch on television as you're going to sleep because it'll put you to sleep.
Is it similar to like bocce where you're supposed to get closest to without hitting the thing in the middle or whatever?
Yeah, you're trying to get as close as you can to the thing in the center.
Yeah.
It's like a big bullseye. I think it's called the I think it might be called the hammer. I can't remember. And then the things you throw are called the stones. But yeah, I love the sport. I think it's great. Brendan, what's your favorite Winter Olympic sport?
I have never played. I think curling looks like it would be really fun to play. I don't know, man. Like
workout.
I haven't watched the Olympics since I lost cable. Like, that was like a flip-through TV, like, just throw it on thing. If I had to pick one, I kind of like the short track speed skating.
Well, that's a good one, too.
It's just all, like, I don't know how the hell you can tell who's going to end up winning. They're just all so close to each other the whole time.
This should not be surprising to you guys at all, but the National Olympic Speed Skating Rink is in Milwaukee, and it's right between Miller Park, or now, what is it, American Family Field, and State Fair Park and the NASCAR and auto racing track is right there. And that's why, like, all the way back, you talk about Dan Jansen and Eric Heiden and his sister back in the day. They're all Wisconsinites. They all did all their training, and because it's in the winter and what else is there to do, a lot of people get into speed skating.
Yeah. You know what we need? A little Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding drama. You're
encouraging and hoping for a billy club to the shin?
That would liven up the Winter Olympics. I mean, they had a 30 for 30 on it. They had a Tanya Harding movie. I mean, yeah, that'd be
I live part of it.
I don't want it to happen.
Drama at all costs.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's Jeremy.
Tanya grew up outside of Portland when I was with the Blazers in Oregon. And Tanya, it was almost like a Applebee's, but at a certain time in the night, it became like a club, and it was really good. And my buddies and I used to go there. And she would be in the corner of the bar with a pack of cigarettes and a pitcher of beer all by herself. And then if my buddies got a little liquored up, they would like follow her around after the whole incident, and they would be like playing.
Oh, this was afterwards.
Oh, yeah. And they would be playing, because she trained at the mall ice skating rink.
Yeah. I've seen the movie.
At Lloyd Center in Portland, where I used to go to lunch every day when I worked for the Blazers. And then we actually saw one night in her pickup truck at a stop sign, the car behind honked, and she got out of the truck, went into the back of the pickup, pulled out a baseball bat, and started flailing like she was going to hit the person behind her car. And we were just like, that's not the Tanya Harding we see on the news and everybody's talking about as an Olympian, but yeah, that's Tanya Harding.
It's the Tanya Harding we all became, Darryl.
Yeah, that's true.
I've seen the movie. Have you seen the movie?
I did not.
It's actually really good.
Is it?
Yeah, it's really good. I think it was up for Best Film, up for an Oscar.
I think you're right.
It was solid. 713-780-ESPN. What's your favorite winter Olympic sport? 713-780-3776. So my top candidate for the Houston Texans coaching search is gone. Kevin O'Connell. Looks like he's going to be the next head coach for the Minnesota Vikings. They just have to wait to dot some I's, cross some T's. He's in the Super Bowl. Jim Harbaugh was in Minnesota yesterday, and it seemed like he was going to be the next head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. Turns out he's not going to be. He's going to stay at Michigan. Do you think that Jim Harbaugh will ever return to the NFL, or was this his last chance? Is this it? Is he staying in college forever?
No, I think there's an itch there. I think that when you read some of the articles, he said his desire is still to win a Super Bowl, and I think he's competitive with his brother, too. He'd love to see which gets there first kind of thing. But I also think that what he did yesterday was dangerous, because if you read between the lines and you also read some of the articles, he went there thinking it was his job to turn down or take. And what he found out was he was in a legit interview situation in which nothing was promised to him, and he didn't like it because he likes to be in control. The even crazier thing was, because he did this on National Signing Day, and he had kind of tipped off some of his recruits that this might be a possibility, he went back now, and you have to ask yourself the question, did he hurt himself at Michigan? But also, if you're Michigan, I guess you dodged a bullet for the short term, but you can't be naive enough to think that this is the last time that he dips his toe in the water.
I'm always of the thought, make sure you have a great head coach over making sure you have great job security. Like, get the best head coach you possibly can. If he leaves in a year, oh well, he leaves in a year, and he probably had a really good season where he got to the college football playoff, right? I'm not so sure how much interest the NFL had in Jim Harbaugh. Like, this is the only known interview that Jim Harbaugh had in this coaching cycle.
In on him for a while?
No, Stephen Ross said from day one, whenever they fired Brian Flores, that he was not going to be the guy that took Jim Harbaugh away from Michigan. Like, and Brendan had a great point, because we were talking about this before the show. Like, in NFL assistants that get coaching interviews, that's like the transaction wire, because you're requesting permission. This guy's interviewing here. This guy's interviewing there. College doesn't have that. So you have to be very clear with the fact that it was the first known interview that Jim Harbaugh had. Like, you didn't have any other teams really show interest in him, at least that were reported. You had a bunch of finalists for a bunch of different jobs. None of them had Jim Harbaugh. Like, it seemed for a guy who had – everybody thought he was going back to the NFL. Everybody thought he was going to get the Raiders job. Everybody thought he was going to get the Minnesota job before he took that interview yesterday, the first known interview. Like, where was the interest for Jim Harbaugh? I just didn't see it.
Do you think that it was agent speak, just trying to pump it up more so that he got more money and more security at Michigan? Because let's be honest, the other thing that he had to look, and probably one of the reasons why he's looking and even going on interviews, is he realizes – that he caught lightning in a bottle last year, but because of Ohio State and Alabama and the way the SEC is loading up now.
I'm sure they'll
try and take
care of
it. But
I'm talking about going into this past year. Like, yeah. He was on the hot seat.
Yeah, because he was on the hot seat, but I'm saying then he finally did what he had said all along that was one of his goals to do, and finally saw that through. But I think that he knows in the big picture that's going to be more of an anomaly than it is going to be a regularity. And so he's trying to look out and cover his own butt.
I thought he was trying to generate interest. The interest wasn't there, and then I felt like he's trying to get a raise out of Michigan, even though the Michigan raise isn't there. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Ray, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going there, fellas?
What's up, Ray?
What's up, Ray?
Yeah, I want to make a couple comments and hang up and listen. But as far as the Texans coaching search goes, I think – to me, and I know it never happened, it probably won't happen now, but Brian Flores should still be the guy. But the problem with the Texans, and the elephant in the room is always going to be Jack Easterby, is that they're always going to do things their way, and they don't care. And they don't care. Cal McNair does not care about his fans. He doesn't care about his organization. They're going to do things their way, and Jack Easterby is going to run the show, and he's going to hire anybody that he wants to hire that he's friends with. And he could care less how much of what they have on their coaching resume, as long as he has a relationship with him. And that's why this franchise is never going to be anything. They're never going to be. They're never going to go anywhere, because they're stuck there. And this is, they're stuck in purgatory, and they're going to be stuck in purgatory until Calvin there finally decides to wake up one day and snap out of it and do something about Jack Easterby. And I'll hang up and listen to see what you guys have to say about it.
Kind of said that.
You can say it again, though.
Well, but no, I mean, I was on the bandwagon of no matter what you're trying to do positively or otherwise, and how you're trying to get the fans back and make moves that are going to tell the fan base that you're committed to doing the right thing, Jack Easterby, There's a black cloud of negativity, as I've said, and the shade that comes with a black cloud is Jack Easterby. And he ain't going anywhere because he's best friends with that owner that you're talking about. And they go to church and brunch and they hang out. And Cal evidently doesn't have a whole lot of friends and seems like, you know what, in order for him to be my best friend, I got to pay him and I got to give him a big title and a whole lot of money to hang around me, as opposed to finding out if he's a true friend or not by just saying, hey, be the team chaplain, be the team positive attitude guy, be my best friend, but stay out of football. And even if you're not going to get rid of him completely, that would go a long way with the fan base. But the ideal situation is much like the caller said, Ray, a lot of people are done until he goes, because he's a remnant of Bill O'Brien. He's a remnant of negativity with everything he's done since Bill O'Brien. And now if McCown gets the job, he's responsible for yet another big gamble as a head coach in which you're looking for some stability. And so people don't like it.
I almost look at him as a separate entity from Bill O'Brien, but in a much greater, in a much more negative way,
but
to be honest
connected.
With you. Yeah, I mean, they had a crossover, and they were being co-general managers for a little bit, so sure. But definitely the symbolism of anger towards the Houston Texans. So Ray's point about the Texans are going to do things in their way and not care, 100% true. Like, they couldn't care less about what everybody else thinks. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, unless they're making poor decision after poor decision after poor decision. Now, to say that it's never going to work, I'm not willing to go that far. I think you can still win. I think Nick Caserio can still build a good enough roster to where you can be in playoff contention. If you find a franchise quarterback, you can still figure out a way to win. That's kind of the argument I've had with the Josh McCown angle of this. Like, we don't know what Josh McCown's going to be. Does he have the resume to be a head coach? No. Does he have the experience? Obviously not. But we don't know the acumen of what he's going to be as a head coach. He could be great. So it could work. Is it likely? Probably not. But to say that it's impossible, I'm not willing to go that far. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What is the importance of a head coach in the Texan system anyways? And also, should Tom Brady have retired a Patriot? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Roman, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Hello, how y'all doing, man? Like y'all show.
Appreciate it, man.
Man, you know, I'm a Texas fan. I secretly watch the Dallas Cowboys because I like their organization, but I can't stand the fans. Now, here's my point. You want the Texans to really show their dismay, man? Just stop coming. You know, back in the early 90s, where Mattress Mack and all these people had to go through all these hoops and stuff to get the fans to come to the stadium because they knew that all the state, but the same thing as the Texans. They stink. Stop coming. They sat there and built that NRG Stadium. They spent all of this money. You really want to show those owners that you owe us something because we spent all these monies on these hot dogs and all this kind of stuff? Then just stop coming. You know, when you fill the stands and you have a team that's winning 3 or 4 games a year, and people are still getting drunk at the stadiums, Big Belly hot dogs, and why? What's giving them an incentive to do anything else?
Appreciate the call, Roman. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. Thanks for the kind words. I think we're seeing that. I mean, I think
we have been saying it.
It hasn't been in droves, maybe as you would have expected, but the ticket sales are going down. To me, the biggest sign, too, is the amount of people that are actually going into the seats. Like, yeah, the tickets have been sold, but the interest in people actually going to the games is at an all-time low. It's lowest that it's ever been in franchise history. The tailgate scene is something that's the lowest it's ever been in franchise history. So you are seeing a trend in that direction. It's not nearly as bad as it was with the Astrodome with the Houston Oilers, but that's because the Houston Oilers basically broke your heart, were leaving. They were going to Nashville, and Bud Adams was taking them away after the city wouldn't give him a new stadium for the Houston Oilers. So you're seeing the trajectory of the fans being disinterested. You're seeing the Houston Texans reduce season ticket prices because they're trying to get more butts in the seat. So I think you are seeing the trend of that.
But I think, Jeremy, you didn't expect from a fan perspective that this was going to go far and beyond Bill O'Brien. I thought that forever and a day, the way the uprising started was, I won't like this team again till Bill goes. I won't support this team again till Bill goes. I was on shows where it was brought up on an almost daily basis in terms of, I won't buy another jersey, go to another game.
With Bill?
With Bill O'Brien, yeah. But because of the fact that they felt like once you got rid of Bill, it was like the head of the snake and all the rest of the nastiness of the organization would leave and it would be a fresh start. But with Jack lingering over, and then not just lingering over as like a hanger on, but having control and power and getting more and more, now they were like, I kind of volunteered that as kind of an idea, but I wasn't really like hell bent on it. But when they saw all this stuff with Easterby, they started thinking, oh, no. Now, I can't do any more of this. This guy's got to go, too. Then it became more of a passion. Then they really got into it. A lot of people, too, were swayed by what happened with Deshaun because they put all their eggs into, but Deshaun's here, so we're still going to be okay once Bill leaves. Well, then Deshaun's stuff went negative. Jack's still around, and it kept building up worse and worse. Trades, bad decisions, the way the team's playing, the wins and losses, and people were like, I thought I could do this for a short period of time, and once they finally came to their senses about Bill, things would get better. When they didn't get better, I think it really pained a lot of people, like, this is a reality we have to do or it's never going to get better.
I don't feel the same way about O'Brien when it comes to, like, that was the pulse of Bill O'Brien. Now, a lot of people didn't like Bill O'Brien. He rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. A lot of people felt that Bill O'Brien was holding the Houston Texans back and that they should upgrade at the head coaching position. I don't feel like he was a popular figure in Houston.
But it was more his general manager stuff.
Right, but he didn't get the general manager stuff until pretty late. Like that, I mean, even in 2019, his last full year as the head coach of the Houston Texans, they were 10-6. They won the division title. They went to the playoffs. They beat the Buffalo Bills at home with Deshaun Watson. So there was hope in Deshaun Watson, the fact that he was going to take this franchise to be an MVP towards absolutely. But they were still, like, they were sold out NRG for the Buffalo Bills playoff win. And then he went to Arrowhead Stadium and had the big lead. Like, it all fell apart quickly. That was the craziness. Like, people didn't like Bill O'Brien, but people weren't not showing up to NRG because of Bill O'Brien.
That was, as we talked about when we were trying to pinpoint when it all started going horribly wrong. Then that offseason when you trade DeAndre Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Then when you start doing the things and you see Jack next to Bill and you realize they're overpaying for Nick Martin. They're overpaying for Kyahmi Fairbairn. They're overpaying for Zach Cunningham and others.
And you know,
yeah, they're making a Tunsil deal without an extension built in, and now Tunsil's holding you hostage, and you're gonna, without an agent, he gets a $9 million bump over the highest paid left tackle in the game.
The writing was on the wall.
At that point, that's when the real sourness came for Bill O'Brien, but that's when people said, look, I'm out until, because they love D-Hop.
See, that was in the offseason, though.
I get it, but also the playoffs weren't – he was still making in-game mistakes, right? He was still making a lot of bad decisions.
People did not like Bill O'Brien, but I don't think it was
preventing
him from going to games.
He was still lipping off the fans. He was cocking off to press conferences. He was doing all these things that really got under people's skin. But you're right. They were still winning, but still we had – and we had people pushing the narrative, and we had people pushing back going, I'm now done. Especially after – you're right, after the Kansas City game. But it was building.
It was more anger than quit. You know what I mean? It was more like, I'm getting frustrated with Bill O'Brien and he's holding us back. But at the same time, you had Deshaun Watson. You still had a top five quarterback in the NFL.
But a lot of people were saying, you think your attitude and the way you're handling your business, you think you're Belichick without the resume, and it started to annoy people more and more as well. So then it was all like the big come to Jesus where it all came together at one moment. But I think that starting then, the whole narrative was, but once he goes, I'm jumping back on. I can't anymore, because the reality was the run's over as soon as they traded D-Hop. And a lot of the offshoots that he did that offseason. And then a lot of people, it just kept getting worse and worse to where people were like, he's got to go. And until he goes, I mean, you did shows. You know what I'm talking about, too. People would call in going, I'm done. I can't anymore. I know Barry Laminack did a whole thing about pick your next team, your voluntary pseudo team you're going to go with until Bill goes. But no one thought that after Bill went, it would still be this bad, and there would still be another guy that you might hate more.
But that, you're right, and the Easterby hates far more than Bill O'Brien, and I think the Easterby hate, and where the franchise is right now, is preventing people from going to the games and the overall disinterest of the Houston Texans far more than when Bill O'Brien was here. The writing was on the wall when Bill O'Brien got the reins and they had this parliament-like general manager for the Houston Texans, and they told you that they were doing it different, but it didn't necessarily need to be wrong. People were frustrated in Bill O'Brien. They didn't feel like he was the great head coach that was going to push them over the hump. But still, I mean, he went to the playoffs in his final season. Now, the frustration came in the offseason for sure. But he only lasted four games in 2020 and got fired.
You're right, but can I interject to where this just came to me, too? There was a lot of things leading up to it, too. It was the Brian Gaine hiring and firing.
Which I didn't dislike Brian Gaine.
No, I didn't either, and a lot of people didn't either. But then when they found out, when the truth started coming out, the reason why he was let go is because he didn't agree with Bill O'Brien,
right,
and he wouldn't give in. And so now you're starting to get to that narrative of people going, who do you think you are, and why is it your way or the highway, and what are you doing
here?
And
even the Rick Smith stuff before.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it was more writing on the wall to me, though. Like, it was the tip of the iceberg. You're seeing it coming, and then all of a sudden, boom. You run into the iceberg, and the iceberg was basically the Kansas City game, the terrible offseason you had where you traded DeAndre Hopkins, mm-hmm. and then starting 0-4 and just the downward spiral. And then it even got worse. Like, when Bill O'Brien got fired, it's like, great, Bill O'Brien's gone. And then it's like, oh, no, Jack Easterby's still around.
But here's the other thing that we found out later, which was all those things being said, he still would have finished out the season and maybe more until Jack Easterby set him up. Because Jack Easterby found out that there was player outrage with a lot of things that Bill O'Brien was doing at practices. And Jack Easterby, who went from confidant and best friend and the only reason why he's in the Texas organization, to go into J.J. Watt and others to say, hey, if you really feel strongly about Bill, send me a text message with all your concerns. Tell me what's pissing you off. And he took them all and he went to Cal. And the next thing you know, Billy was on the hot seat and Billy was gone. And Jack was sitting there scot-free, standing there going, I'm still standing, Elton John. I'm here for you, Sing 2. I've got it. And I think that's where, again, people were like, whoa, be careful what you wish for.
The demise was fast. It was all the way down to rock bottom. Everybody's hoping, or some are hoping, that Nick Caserio can fix it, but it still seems like the Jack Easterby effect is looming. And if it's Josh McCown as the next head coach of the Houston Texans, how much of that is Jack Easterby still having the ear of the decision maker of the Houston Texans? 713-780-ESPN. When we return, one of the Wheelhouse men will join us. We'll ask him what their favorite Winter Olympic sport is and also when they need to start getting worried about Deshaun Watson as we look ahead to the April 28th draft in 2022 in the National Football League. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, hey, we know the big weekend is coming up. You've got time, but there is still a lot to be done if you want to put some money down getting ready for the Super Bowl or otherwise, and you can do that at mybookie.ag. Mybookie.ag has all the lines and all the games for all the bets for you in any sport. Almost every sport's available on a daily basis. In-game betting is not a problem. Prop bets are always there for you for the taking as well, including all the ones that we know come up with that big game, but also the fact that they take care of their customers. It's real simple. You go to mybookie.ag, and whether you're a first-time customer, a returning customer, or a new customer, put in the promo code BET975 when you put in your next deposit. They're going to double it up to $1,000. So if you put $100 in your account, you got $200 to bet with. More money in your account, more games to bet on, and more chances to win. And when you win, they're going to pay you. They're not going to hem and haw and trying to encourage you to keep it in your account and bet more. Nope, if you want it out in your pocket, they're going to send it to you. They also take money from you, whether it be from a charge card, a check, cryptocurrency. They try to make it as easy as possible so that you don't have to, it's not problematic to try and put money in your account. They also take care of you with a lot of just different prop bets that don't cost you anything to get involved from a marketing perspective. But if you win, you're going to get paid because they want you to be happy at mybookie.ag. Check them out today, mybookie.ag. Put in that promo code BET975. And remember, you can bet anywhere, anytime, any place with MyBookie.
This is ESPN 97.5. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Killer B of the Wheelhouse, Brad Kellner, is joining us. He'll be on 3 to 7. No Aggie basketball tonight, right?
Bummer.
Yeah, you hate those long days, right?
I do.
What's your favorite Winter Olympic sport?
First of all, it's amazing that you guys can do a three-hour program with zero talking points. I want to commend y'all for that. I hear the big voice guy say that a few times during each show, so I feel like that goes...
You don't lie. I don't think.
Underappreciated by a lot, but not by me.
I'm not even sure I've ever heard that.
I don't think I have either, but I'll just said whatever.
It. He just said it. You guys tune out the voice guy.
We talk in between the breaks.
Yeah.
Favorite
Olympic sport. They're always super nice.
Well, and they always pop in for just a brief moment. They're never there for any long time. You got to catch them while they're there.
Nice, supportive. Everything you want in a person, you can find.
Johnny G loves the Twitchers.
I like our Twitchers.
I do too.
I do too.
No sarcasm big for fans. Me.
They have. I take a lot of the suggestions.
Never.
Stop.
Couldn't be me. Ice hockey is my favorite sport.
Okay.
I like it more when the NHL players are involved.
Favorite Olympic sport?
Olympic sport.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I also enjoy freestyle skiing, which is cool. They do all the tricks on skis. I think that's badass.
Yeah.
Snowboarding is really cool as well. Skeleton, underrated.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
That is the most dangerous looking sport in the entire world.
No doubt.
They go face first. It's the individual bobsled. They go face first.
It's like a luge with a different direction, right?
Yeah, down a sheet of ice. Yep. That looks terrifying. You couldn't pay me enough money in the world to try that, and those people do it barely.
Plus, you're wearing
any
a glorified bodysuit of second skin. You're not padded like in a football uniform. When you hit the rails and the sides and whatever, even just the ice.
Right. It's all about aerodynamics, yeah. Right? So, like, they want as thin of equipment as they could have. Basically, all they have is a helmet, and they're sliding down face first a giant sheet of ice at 100 miles per hour.
All right. That's a pretty good little list there. How many hours would you say you watch of the Winter Olympics? Like, is it something that's on every night?
Well, let's be honest. It depends on what else is on.
Yeah, it does depend on what else is on. What's the time change?
Well, it doesn't matter. They'll be showing replay on
prime time. That's what I don't like, though, with social media and all the different ways that we get our sports now. I hate finding out. I'm watching an event, but all of a sudden I happen to look at Twitter and someone says, did you see that final period in the USA hockey game when they won 3-2? And I'm like, well, I'm done.
Yeah.
I already know the outcome. Screw it.
That might be why hockey's not my favorite winter Olympic sport. It's because
boy,
you get
the
spoilers. Round
is unreal.
You get the spoilers, you know?
Yeah.
Like, where if, like, skeleton and curling's my favorite. Like, they're not going to spoil that on ESPN.
Oh, no one's tweeting about that.
Yeah, no one's
anything.
Tweeting about that. You can bury that news. You're not going
to NBC tries to bury it because they have that morning coverage as well.
Right.
But sometimes it's inescapable because a lot of the other networks go, screw you, you paid all that money for the rights, but it doesn't preclude me from telling you who won.
Whatever I bet on, I will watch, and I bet on a lot when it comes to the Olympics.
Do you really?
There's nothing better than being at a bar with hundreds of other people, and many of y'all have bet on an Olympic sport, and they've got it on at the bar, and everybody's going nuts. It's a bonding experience.
I don't think that. I've ever bet on a winter Olympic sport.
Me either.
Mm.
Summer Olympics, sure.
Not even curling?
No.
Oh,
Summer Olympics?
Yeah, like basketball, stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's normally kind of a...
Soccer.
It's a wash. Like, the USA is going to just boat race everybody, and then it's like, who's playing for third?
That's why they have spreads.
Are you taking the American -42
yeah,
or not?
I still, that's just not intriguing for me to even want to watch it, because whether they win or lose, I'm like, it's not something I want to be entertained by.
Soccer, things like that. I've never been on the Winter Olympics. What Winter Olympic sport do you bet on? Hockey?
Anything.
Anything.
No, I like betting on sports that I know nothing about, because then I don't feel as bad when I lose.
But you like
when I bet on
money.
Football and I lose, it's like, I should know this. I do this for a living. I talk about this. Why could I not have figured that out? When I lose on curling, I can't get mad at myself. I have no idea what's going on.
You do a lot of losing, don't you?
No.
I thought you did.
No, I do better. Okay. Well, I do better betting on sports that I know nothing about than I do on sports that
that says a lot about what people should listen to and not listen to.
My best betting league of all time was the KBO, the Korean Baseball Organization.
Oh, really? Oh, especially when yes.
So I bet on that a ton because I had to fill my vice when COVID started and no sports were happening over here. Dude, I crushed it with the Koreans.
AJ Hoffman was big on it, too.
Yeah.
AJ Hoffman cashed in a lot on the KBO.
Basically the opposite of what I've been for Wheelhouse of Fortune in our football picks this year. That's what I was with the Koreans.
You'd be living at the Waffle House?
Oh, the Koreans were making me so much money, dude. I love the Koreans. North, South, all of them.
Did you watch the games?
I did.
Okay.
Not all of them, because they were on in the middle
of the night. Have you experienced real ramen?
In a bag? Or you mean
no,
the
not
in a
the
bowl?
Ones we ate in college.
What about
Jeremy
the hotel?
Was explaining. I got hell from 50 different directions, because I've heard of the pho, which is pho.
It is pho.
Yeah.
Okay, but I've never been into a restaurant. I worked with someone that used to bring it in occasionally, but then I made the horrible mistake of saying that I didn't know if they served ramen-type noodles where you get pho, and people attacked me, but I have never been out for either.
Yeah.
But I'm not opposed to it.
I've had real ramen before. I mean, I haven't been to Korea or Asia and had ramen, but I have eaten actual ramen here.
Scale of 1 to 10.
Very good. I'm not a huge soup guy.
That's not a 1.
Midwest is a very big soup country.
Okay, so for soup, it's soup like country. An 8 for what I eat it versus some more solid foods. Like a 4.
How about pho? Like, where would you stack it up relative to their genre?
What if
genre
it was family made, like some mother pho?
Sopa.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
The sofa king? Type of, yeah, okay. I prefer
two
ramen over
sofas.
Pho.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Need a love seat?
Go ahead. Yeah, sofa you got king? One? I'll take one.
If possible.
At what point do you get worried that Deshaun Watson won't get moved before the 2022 NFL draft?
They got some Sofa King great deals over at the Sofa King, for those curious.
You're on it now.
I heard y'all talking about this earlier, and it's intriguing conversation. I don't think I'm as worried as Joel is, maybe as either of you guys are. And I understand your skepticism and your nervousness because we haven't made a lot of progress in this legal process here. But I think of the reports at the trade deadline a couple of months ago that – Deshaun was close to settling 18 of the 22, and then the Dolphins were going to make a deal if he was able to settle the other 4. Now, those other 4 could be like, hey, we're not settling. We're going to drag this thing out and make this take forever to screw over Deshaun Watson. And also, we feel like we deserve what we're entitled to. We feel like we're in the right here. But because a few months ago, there were reports that the vast majority of these were willing to settle, I think I'm still confident that this is going to be resolved by the April draft.
Here's what I'll rebuttal to you guys with. This is Tony Busby. When this goes away, so does the majority of his attention and fame for a long time because he doesn't have any kind of high-profile case like this. He wants to kind of stretch this thing out. He also kind of enjoys the fact that in doing so, he's putting the Texans and Deshaun Watson's futures in limbo, so to speak.
Mm. Yeah, look, there's always going to be a high-profile case for Tony Busby. Like, he's got the Astro World cases right now, and he's dealing with Travis Scott. Like, there's always going to be some work for that dude. I'm with you. Like, he likes to be in the limelight. There's no doubt about that. But I think he'd rather win this thing than drag it out and risk potentially losing this thing.
What do you think the baseline is for Deshaun Watson if he does get traded? Because I still think that this is all going to get settled before. Maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, and maybe he does get traded before the April 28th NFL draft. I don't think he's going to get the return that everybody says, like the 3 first-rounders, the 2 seconds, and a third. I don't feel like it's going to be as big as we once thought.
Where are you at right now? What do you think it's going to be?
Probably like 2 first and like 2 seconds.
Okay.
So like not that far off, but I don't see him getting 3 first-round picks.
I think it'll be 3 first just because of the guys who have gone for 2 first in the past. Like Jamal Adams, a box safety, went for 2 first and change. Laramie Tunsil, I know it was Trader Bill, and Trader Bill doesn't exist anymore, but like that guy went for 2 first. So I think a quarterback of Deshaun Watson's caliber is going to go for 3 first. Will it also be a bunch of seconds and a bunch of other stuff? I don't know, but I do think there will be a team that is willing to go to 3 first again.
Take that and also take into consideration what I said earlier, which is the market that's out there. Aaron Rodgers could get 3 if in just in what they're offering, whether he ends up going somewhere else or not. That'll push every other team to go, if I don't get him, I might be able to get Deshaun for about the same kind of haul.
All of those examples, though, they don't have 20-something civil cases and are still waiting a criminal grand jury indictment on whether or not it's going to happen, and also a suspension that is going to come by the NFL.
I'm just going off the assumption that you made, right? And maybe it's wishful thinking.
Right.
But I'm going off of, by the time the draft is here, the legal situation will be squared away, and teams will be more willing to trade. Obviously, you've got the suspension, but still 8 games for a guy who's in his 20s who has 4 years left on his contract, I think teams will still bite the bullet.
What's coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
Are we down to 2 for the Texans head coaching search? We'll get into that. Ross Tucker will be joining us at 3:30 for some NFL conversation. So some Texan stuff, also some Rockets conversation with the Jalen Green, Evan Mobley show that we had last night at the launch pad.
Did you have any idea that the Rising Stars game is now like this 3-team or 4-team round robin weird deal?
I did, only because I was on Twitter at the right time last week.
This is the first year, right?
The first year. Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they haven't done a great job of promoting.
See the bad body language when Eric Gordon decided to go one on the defense last night with the clock running down?
Yes.
Not a good look.
Not a good look. One week till the deadline.
Better do something.
Yeah.
All right, BK will be listening. Good stuff as always. Want to thank the city for listening to the Killer Bees. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.